Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekly, your audio guide to Israel, the Middle East and the Jewish world. I'm Simon Spangin. On today's show...
Sweetness, I was only joking when I said I'd like to mash a tree to...
If you've just got out of quarantine, listener, you might be wondering why Seth Rogen is burning up the Jewish Twitter sphere, why the head of the Jewish agency called the actor's mum to kvetch, and why his comments on a comedy podcast have been making headlines. Well, depending on which news outlet you read, Rogen has either given voice to the ambivalence of many diaspora Jews of his generation towards Israel, or he's crossed over to the dark side and become a self-hating Jew who doesn't think Israel should exist. Days before the release of his latest movie, which Rogen says is his most Jewish to date, he sat down for a set-the-record-straight Zoom conversation with Haaretz's Alison Kaplan Summer. You've read the article, you've seen the video, now listen to the whole interview exclusively on Haaretz Weekly. And please don't forget to subscribe to get every episode of the show delivered directly to your device.
Are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Ugh, I hate this stuff. And I'm like too old for the technology. Are you like doing this like 25 times a day and you're so used to it?
I'm doing a lot of them, but I would say I'm still amazed at how rarely it actually functions the way it's supposed to. So you're in good company, I would say.
Okay. I never know like what's like normal discomfort with this or what's generational, you know?
No, it's all weird, I would say, 100%. I find it very strange as well.
Okay, so let's see if I can like out-Jew Marc Maron.
Go for it.
But I'll start with the easy question, which is I really do want to know like the origin story. Did you see the New Yorker story and like say that's for me? Did someone bring it to you? Like how did it come to you?
Yeah, I knew Simon Rich a little bit. Coincidentally, my first time hosting Saturday Night Live was his first episode as a writer on Saturday Night Live. And we kind of bonded over what a bizarre experience it was for both of us. And a few years later, he wrote the short story and I read it and we talked and he said, you know, like, I wrote the story about myself, but as I was picturing it as a movie, I always pictured you and I pictured you playing both the roles. And this was maybe like 7 years ago, 6 years ago. And I was, the one thing he said that I could not have related to more, which I think I mentioned, is like, I was like, why did you write this story? And he said, you know, I have this picture of my grandfather when he was 25 years old and I was around 25 years old. And I kept looking at it thinking that if we knew each other at that same age, he would have hated me. And that was exactly something that I could not have related to more. My grandfather was, you know, he was in the army, he was in the Navy. He played football. He was a tough, tough man. And, you know, I am a sheltered comedian writer. And even as he was my grandfather, you know, he tolerated me, I would say. But if we were contemporaries, I think we would not have got along very well. And
so I read somewhere your grandfather was in Yiddish theater, and I don't picture Herschel in Yiddish theater, you know?
No, my great grandparents were in Yiddish theater. My grandfather was not in Yiddish theater. My grandfather was a tough blue collar man.
Yeah. So like, did it immediately had the appeal to you? Like you didn't have to be talked into doing it. You immediately saw yourself being able to do the role. Cause I mean, the Herschel role is so not Seth Rogen, you know, is it the most uncomedic role you've ever done in terms of, you know, the, you know, playing it absolutely straight? I mean, the situations are funny, but he's a serious character.
He is serious. I did the Steve Jobs movie a few years ago that felt similar, honestly, at times, and just as far as how seriously we were kind of mandated to take it. It took me a few years to decide to play the role. We actually did a table read several years ago where I only played the Ben role and we had another actor play the Herschel role to see how that was. I was very nervous about it, honestly. I was nervous about doing an accent. I was nervous about, you know, both, like, there's a lot of you know, comedically, there's not a great tradition of actors doing accents and playing two characters. And so yeah. I knew that there was a lot of potholes I could stumble over. And I really wanted to make sure that I was going into it with the right motivation.
Well, I liked it. It was really well done. And, you know, they just, they're rebooting the Fiddler on the Roof film. And I like have not been able to picture it, Tevye. And I think you're there, you know.
Perfect. I can't sing.
Singing in the Lion King. You've got this. Like, I don't even, you know, I think you're the clear choice.
One bit. Thank you.
Was like how much of this was Simon's original story, his family, and how much of it was you as producer sitting down and like plugging your stuff into it?
A lot of it was original. I'd say the thing that I was the biggest kind of proponent of, and maybe the biggest evolution in the script, was kind of really making the themes, one of the major themes of the movie, grief. That was something that, to me personally, I just couldn't think of a lot of movies that have that as a theme. Mm-hmm. And as I get older, it's a very prevalent theme in my life, unfortunately, and people I know's life. And it's also something that specifically I find Judaism has been very helpful to me for. And I find Jewish protocols around grief and grieving to be highly applicable, you know? And so, you know, as we were making the film and talking about the film, and one of the themes of the film is kind of this rejection of, you know, your ancestry and your religion. And, and that we knew that ultimately we wanted it to come back to a place that was affirmative of those things. And it seemed to me like grief was a very interesting way to explore that stuff.
I couldn't help thinking during, you know, all of the moving Kaddish thing, I was like, Seth Rogen went to Hebrew school. I bet you he could really do the Kaddish if he wanted to.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the character as well, like it's in his head somewhere. And as much as we, you know, people think they might not need that anymore as they get older, I think it's something that we do need.
Yeah. And then you decided to make life imitate art with your Marin interview, and now the whole world is Herschel looking at you and judging you for like what you think about Israel and about Judaism and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I understand how removed from the context of a conversation and the umbrella of humor taken from above it, I think I understand. I understand.
I liked where you said you were 100% scared of the Jews' reaction. And I'm like, this comes from a guy who like pissed off a North Korean dictator with nuclear capabilities. He's scared of a bunch of old Jews.
That was a joke. I mean, again, I'm not physically afraid of.
No, I know.
I was, again,
I was like, well, maybe he's afraid of his parents.
Exactly. I mean, I know this speaks to, you know, probably a lack of foresight on my end to some degree. Like, I think me and Mark were both highly aware of how sensitive some of the subjects we were speaking on were. And, you know, I actually listened to it back yesterday morning and truly, I do think that the conversation we had is a very common conversation among Jews.
Well, I wrote that. It's a thing that people have in private conversations all the time, but you don't hear public figures, especially Jewish celebrities, saying it publicly.
And I agree that it could be, and I also think, and my very wonderful wife pointed this out, is, you know, when having a conversation about something so sensitive and so nuanced, it's not what we said, it's partially what we said, but it's also what we did not say. And I think things, you know, when you're having even a humorous conversation about something so nuanced, you know, leaving things out or omitting things can become just as, just as bad as the things you do say. And I think listening back to the conversation, I am aware that, you know.
So do you regret saying things, or you just think that you said things out of context or without enough of a background or something?
Yeah, I think that it's a tricky conversation to have in jest. And that is something that perhaps I now look at and say, oh, well, if people, you know, now that we had joked about that, perhaps we could clarify some things so people don't run around thinking that I think Israel should not exist anymore. And I understand how, and I'm sensitive to Jewish people being hurt, you know, as a Jewish person. And I'm sensitive to Jewish people thinking I'm not a proud Jewish person, which I am. And and truthfully, I think, you know, my pride in being Jewish and how deeply I identify as a Jewish person perhaps made me feel like I was able to say things without as much context as perhaps I should give them. You know what I'm saying? And I am sensitive to Jews thinking that I don't think Israel should exist. And I understand that there are many Jewish people who are alive who would not be without Israel. And my parents met in Israel. I've been to Israel several times.
Sorry, on a gossipy note, can you please tell us the meet cute on a kibbutz story? We need to know how your parents met.
Of course. My parents met at kibbutz Beit Alpha. My dad's from New Jersey and my mom is from Vancouver, and they were two young hippies, you know, looking to get out of their cities and meet other people. And my dad actually would have lived on the kibbutz forever and still talks about
it. Yeah, I was going to say, they didn't drink any of the Kool-Aid. They didn't consider staying there, and you would have been born. Can you imagine Seth Rogen as an Israeli?
Exactly. My dad is a socialist, and I was raised with a lot of very socialist ideals, and I think a part of him is deeply upset that he ever left the kibbutz, but he's probably very happy he did, because he married my mom and started a life in Vancouver as a result of it. That's how my parents met in Israel.
Yeah. Canadian Jews and American Jews are a completely different breed. I mean, it must be really interesting to be a Canadian Jew, you know, in Hollywood, married to someone from an American Jewish upbringing. I mean, I don't know. I find Canadians, like I find Australians or South African Jews, much, much different. Do you find that?
We are. Yeah, I think there's a difference in general. I think, and truthfully, I think it speaks to some degree to why I understand some people are not happy with some of the things I said, because I as a Canadian, you know, anti-Semitism and in general bigotry is prevalent in Canada, but not to the degree that it is in America. My wife, you know, grew up in Central Florida, where she faced terrible anti-Semitism on a regular basis. You know, I'm from Vancouver, British Columbia, one of the most progressive cities on the planet. And although I did face regular anti-Semitism, it was not to the degree that, you know, people I know who grew up in America, especially Southern American cities, faced. So I do think Canadian Jews, especially, and there's not a lot of Jews on the West Coast of Canada either. So I think it's a slightly different phenomenon. You know, we do grow up a little bit of like a West Coast Canadian Jewish bubble. Even the Jews I know from Montreal and Toronto have a much different experience than I personally had, you know.
So did you seriously hate your day school? Because it kind of sounds like it.
I didn't hate my day school. I think it's an interesting thing to find you are going to school to learn things that you will maybe one day decide you should unlearn. And I think religion in general, I mean, this is not specific to Judaism, religion in general is a very tricky thing with kids. I don't have kids. I see my friends with kids and their discomfort and with how to introduce religion into their kids' lives, even especially when they themselves are not religious and, you know, are agnostic to a large degree. It's a very complicated thing. So I think, like many aspects of my life, I have a very conflicted, it's conflicted in some ways. I'm not mad at my parents for sending me to Jewish school by any means. You know, I still have very good friends I met there. And I'm sure if I went to public school, I would find things that I didn't like about it either, you know.
I listened to an old podcast that you did, and it just kind of sounded like you found yourself more like when you went into the public high school. So it kind of sounded like you felt, I don't know, like oppressed or misunderstood or like in an overly, you know, oppressive environment in the day school, and then like you were free in high school.
Yeah, I think by nature, yeah. I mean, we wore uniforms. Mm-hmm. It was not a diverse school at all. You know, it was all little white Jewish kids, like, whose parents were all friends with each other. Like, it was very, you know, enclosed. And then I got to high school, and all of a sudden I went to public high school. All of a sudden I could dress however I wanted. There was kids from all different backgrounds, all races, from all different countries. My high school was, you know, 65-70% people from Asian countries, which was, you know, especially being from Vancouver, which is so heavily populated by people from Asian countries. It was just, it was a wonderful and eye-opening experience to get to become friends with the people and get to spend all day with the people that I lived amongst, you know. I lived in a completely East Indian neighborhood. So to be able to go to school with East Indian kids was really exciting to me, honestly, because I had grown up around them in my neighborhood. But in my school, I was only around Jewish kids. So, but I don't think, again, I completely understand, and I'm glad I know a lot about Judaism, and I did retain a lot of that.
Yeah.
You
want to try some Hebrew out on me?
What do you want? Yeah, I mean, so I don't, you know,
did the psychopathic Habanim Dror Israeli counselors teach you any good swear, you know, curses in Hebrew or anything?
A little bit. Lech Lecha, was that a Hebrew swear? Yeah, I mean, there were some things. I honestly can't remember the worst of them.
I know.
But,
I know, the psychopath thing, I'm like, just think, these guys, right? They got out of high school, and they were told what to do all day, every day for 3 years in the army and wear uniforms. And then all of a sudden, they were set free and sent to some camp in America. I'm like, yeah, they were psychopaths. Of course they were.
And it's funny, and again, I do not want to paint Israelis as psychopaths, but that was the first, honestly, what's funny to me, interestingly, is the first stand-up joke I ever wrote when I was 13 years old was about my Israeli summer camp counselors. and the strange things they would do to discipline us.
And you met your partner and your creative partner in bar mitzvah class, right?
I did, yes. Talis and Tefillin class. Yep.
So you see, if not for Judaism, where would you be?
I mean, again, I could not identify more as a Jewish person. I talk about it.
You have a choice, right?
Yes, exactly. I talk about it almost constantly. And you know, there's a lot of, you know, I could talk about it less, but I don't. Yeah. It is a huge
can you unpack the part about being lied to about Israel? Because I don't know how much you keep up with political Israeli American Jewish thing, but it's a thing. They lied to me about Israel. There's like, you know, these activist groups, you know, wanting to go into camps and wanting to change Jewish education and saying we need to hear the Palestinian narrative at a younger age. So those are like, to some people, a real trigger when you said you were lied to. And I think what specifically, like in day school, in camp, from your parents, like what do you consider the big lie?
I'd say personally, holistically, I was just not given a full picture of the situation. And I understand it's a wildly complex picture to give a child. And perhaps that is not why it was given to me. But
there was this abandoned desert and the Jews came and built a country. That's what you were told, basically?
Essentially, yeah. That's what me and many people I know were told. And again, I am not attacking, you know, all I am attacking there is the education I was given about it. And I talked to my parents about it, actually. And I was just the other day, yesterday, and I was like, do you feel as though we were given that even available was a complete story? And they said no. They were like, yeah, we're looking back at the time, I think you were given a somewhat, you know, a less complex view of the situation than maybe you could have been given.
Right.
And I think that is something that, you know, as I look to Jewish people I know with kids, I think, you know, they are taking it on themselves to try to paint a more complete picture of how complex a situation it is, you know? So I understand how that is upsetting, and how Jewish people wish I was given a better education about it. And I understand how it's uncomfortable for some people to hear me say that I was not given that.
Yeah. So I don't know if you and Maren set out to light Jewish Twitter on fire, but you did.
We did not.
And, you know, the way Twitter works these days, you had, you know, people in the Uber, whatever you want to call it, progressive, you know, some would say anti-Zionist or elimination, whatever, forget the labels, but they're like, yeah, we won him over. In 2014, he signed this petition about, you know, not criticizing Israel for Gaza. And now he's talking about how we don't need Israel because we should be spread out all over the place. Like basically,
that was, and again,
you know, so they're cheering. And then you've got obviously the usual suspects, you know, calling you a self-hating, you know, miserable guy who should be disbarred from Judaism. So, you know, that's the way Twitter, Twitter rages. I don't know if you did that unintentionally or not.
I for sure did that unintentionally. And, I'm very sensitive to, I don't want Jews to think that I don't think Israel should exist. And yeah. I understand how, they could have been led to think that, you know,
But I mean, the stuff about it being nuts to put all the Jews in the same place, that's, you know, very common. It's not an uncommon
to me, that is a joke I've heard Israelis make, and I understand.
Absolutely.
When the humor is removed from it, I understand how, you know, if you take any comedic monologue and treat it as though it is not based in humor, there is probably some very questionable thoughts in there. And
yeah,
I'm not
yeah.
Saying
well,
that.
For you know, Jews are supposed to be good at humor. People weren't taking, you know, with a hold yeah. on. I'm plugging in my computer before I lose you. Hold on.
No problem. But again, I don't want to blame people. Again, and my instinct is to not put it on the people for misinterpreting what I said. Like, you know, things I said were taken and chopped up, and the context literally removed from it. And if I read some of the things out of context, I would probably also be upset about it. You know what I mean? And so I understand the sensitivity. And as far as things to joke about, it's a tough one, you know?
Yeah. not a lot of humor in it. So while we're not being funny, I read that you were shooting American Pickle in Pittsburgh when the shooting happened. What was that like?
You know, it was, the Tree of Life shooting happened. I actually think the weekend, like, we were supposed to start shooting on Monday, and I think it happened that Saturday morning, if I'm not mistaken. And it was, I was around a mile away from it, maybe 2 miles away when it happened. It was, in a sense, very scary, but in another sense, you know, I remember thinking, like, I'm about to make the most Jewish movie I've ever made, and probably the most Jewish movie almost anyone's ever made, in the wake of the most, you know, violent anti-Semitic attack in the history of America in the same city, you know. And there was a sense that it suddenly became much more important to do it. And any fear I had about how Jewish a movie it was, I honestly thought, like, if there was ever a time to double down on this, now is that time.
Was that a thing during production? Like, you know, maybe this is too Jewish for America. You know, this isn't a mainstream thing. This is like too ethnic.
100%. It was a topic of conversation, from the studio and the producers. The overall sense of, like, you know, this is a very Jewish film, and, you know, there are not a ton of Jews in America, and B, a mm-hmm. lot of people just plain don't like Jews in America, and so
you're kidding.
Exactly. It was definitely a topic of conversation, but honestly, I was the shooting made me think it was in some ways, a more important message to be putting out there, a story where the antagonists are Jews, a movie that's unabashedly about Jews and Judaism. Part of me really thought, like, now is the exact time to do this and put this in the world, you know? Mm-hmm.
Is it hard to talk about anti-Semitism in Hollywood, where there's the perception that, like, the Jews are in charge, the Jews run everything, you're perceived as being part of this very powerful group of Jewish guys, you know, Judd Apatow and you and Jonah Hill and Evan and all of these guys. And, you know, that whole dynamic of you can't sort of feel like the victim of anti-Semitism because you're so powerful, but then saying that you're powerful is in itself like a form of anti-Semitism. There's been all these controversies lately with African Americans, you know, quoting Farrakhan, Nick Cannon, and Ice Cube, and in sports, Deshaun Jackson. I mean, it's kind of tricky. Do you find it? I saw you called out Mel Gibson, right?
Oh yes, many times.
Yeah. Is it weird to, you know, is that dynamic hard to juggle?
I personally have not found it incredibly hard to juggle. I think I try to call out anti-Semitism where I see it. I know for a fact that, you know, anti-Semitic people also do thrive in Hollywood. And so the notion that Jews control the careers of everyone in Hollywood is wildly inaccurate. And Mel Gibson has made several movies over the last several years. He won an Academy Award, I think, for one of them in the wake of making horribly anti-Semitic comments. So to me, it's not a reality I have a hard time grappling with. I know factually that Jews do not control every element of Hollywood. If they did, there'd be a lot of people who are working who would not be, you know? And so the notion of calling out anti-Semitism within Hollywood, especially to me, is easy, you know, and is the easiest thing I could be doing, especially because it's my own community, you know, Hollywood, not Jews.
So a more fun topic. First of all, you're this mogul now with all of these, you know, development things going on, you know, so many movies and shows and everything. I'm really interested in the whole comic book thing.
Yeah.
There's something about Jewish guys in comic books. You know, I know Michael Chabon, I went to college with his wife. And so when Cavalier and Clay, if you know that novel,
of course, yes,
first came out about, you know, the connection between Jews and the Holocaust and comic books, it's well known Superman was developed by Jews. There just seems to be this through line. And so I'm really interested in the fact that you seem to be very connected now to comic properties. And did you always love the comic books?
I did, ever since I was a kid. I was a huge comic book fan, and Stan Lee is Jewish. He's one of the architects of the comic universe as we know it, you know? And I think the more you analyze the stories of comic books, the more you see these themes of people being othered, people being attacked for, you know, how they were born, their attributes. You know, there's explicitly Jewish storylines in some of the comic books. Magneto is a Holocaust survivor. I mean, and as a kid reading that was very powerful and something that just really hooked me, you know. And I think that, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Jewish storytelling obviously is, you know, a tradition. And I think the fact that, you know, Stan Lee and other Jewish creators were able to thrive in that field, probably because they weren't allowed to work in other ones, is a large part of the reason that I love comic books and everyone loves comic books. You know, I think that, it is yet another.
So are you working hard in this crazy corona period? I mean, I don't know. You're like persona. I saw you on with Jimmy Kimmel or something, like, yeah, I'm home. I'm doing pottery. I don't mind doing. I mean, you've been working for years, like, so intensively, so hard, shooting so many things. Which is the real Seth Rogen? Like, the guy who's like itching to get back to work, or the guy who's like, I like hanging out at home and getting high and making my pottery and, you know, I don't miss any of it?
I think somewhere in between. I more, you know, I think long for some sense of normalcy, and especially,
don't we all? Yeah.
And I live a very comfortable life, I have to say. And I'm, and if anything, I've been very grateful for my situation throughout this time, and been very sympathetic to people whose life this is incredibly upending to, you know? And so I think I've been really trying not to prioritize my own issues here, because they are few and far between relatively. And I do just recognize that, you know, in America, especially, like, this pandemic.
Yeah. Maybe you should have headed back up to Vancouver, huh?
I mean, some of my friends did. Yeah, I mean, in America, just, you know, this situation is being handled terribly by an incredibly stupid man. And so I really hope that things change soon.
Yeah. Yeah, you hear what happened here in Israel. We were like, we got it down to almost zero, down to 10 cases. And then we were like, we won the war. We can go back to normal. And
yeah, Australia is just having a flare up, I was reading.
Yeah. We really had it down, and it came back up, because we were a little too, I know it's hard to believe that Israelis are overconfident and, you know, think that they're, you know, they're special and different from anyone else. But yeah, we, you know, we brought back the big parties and the weddings too quickly, and the and back to school, and everything shot back up. So yeah, we were there and we had it, and it slipped away.
Yeah.
So just back to the movie. Are you? I mean, this has been years in the making. I guess every film is. But are you excited about it finally dropping on HBO?
I am excited. I'm always nervous. I think, you know, releasing anything into the world, I say it's like birth, you know, it's like a painful process. Like, no matter how much you were looking forward to it, or how happy you are with it, or how much, you know, positive feelings you have associated with the film, the release of a film is always stressful and scary, and in some ways excruciating. And so
why you don't have kids, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I kind of just strap in and try to get through it. Honestly, I'm excited for people to see it. I'm very proud of the film. We worked very hard on the film. I think it is a very unique film. And I am genuinely excited for people to see it, but the process of releasing a film is, for me, very stressful.
No, I'm sure, you know, especially with what's going on. So I wouldn't, first of all, I think your mother is amazing. I think she's like a gold Jewish mother.
She is.
And she's terrific. I love her Twitter feed.
She's very happy I'm talking to you right now. So. Mm-hmm. She's very happy I'm talking to you right now.
Oh, yeah. And so I wouldn't be a proper Jewish mother if I didn't ask you when you're coming to Israel.
Sometime soon we were gonna go.
You can do your apology tour
in person. Exactly. Yeah, my mother has actually been wanting to plan a family trip for me and Lauren and them to go to Israel together. So
you were like, you were off to Hollywood too young for them to make you do a stint on the kibbutz, right?
Well, I went with MBI, which through my Jewish summer camp, I went to Israel, and we stayed on a kibbutz actually for a little while. My sister did workshop, which is a year in Israel where they lived on a kibbutz, and I went and stayed. I visited them for a couple weeks also.
Did your siblings spend time here?
Yeah, my sister lived in Israel for a year, yeah.
Oh, for a year? Yeah. Uh-huh. Are any of them like active in like Jewish stuff, Jewish politics, anything like that?
Not incredibly, no. Uh-huh. My sister, is a social worker in Vancouver, is married to a guy she met at summer camp. they're not... her kids go to Talmud Torah, which is I think very interesting to me, because she was one of the first people I ever knew who was kind of outspoken against religion as a whole, and now she sends her kids to Hebrew school, which just shows the draw of continuity.
Yeah,
nothing else.
And you can think about what kind of Jewish education you'd give your non-existent children, right?
Exactly. Maybe that's why I don't have them. I don't want to make that decision. But no, they're not particularly active in the Jewish community, I would say.
Yeah. You said in the Marin thing that your wife wishes that it meant more to you.
I mean, that again is a joke that that I think is not a joke that is best serving my interests.
Yeah, especially when you're stuck home with your wife 24/7, for sure.
I understand that. Again, my wife grew up in an environment where there were very few Jewish people, and those who were Jewish were heavily prejudiced.
Orlando's fair has a decent-sized Jewish community.
She's from Lakeland, Florida, which is central.
Never heard
Florida.
Of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, like, it's not something I understood, but, like, when you think of the South, like, Florida is the South. Mm-hmm. It's actually south of the South. And so it's south of Alabama. And so
Wow. That's
where my wife grew up. And, you know, I think, and I understand that to her, meeting other Jewish people was a very important thing. Whereas, and again, growing up with, although there's not a lot of other Jews in Vancouver, I knew pretty much all of them. And so I had a lot of Jewish friends growing up. So it is more a joke that I've made in the past that, again, I do not think serves me. I understand intrinsically one of the things, you know, my wife's personality is what it is because of her being Jewish and her upbringing. And to say that I don't care about that is obviously a dismissive joke, but I love every element of my wife, and the fact that she is Jewish is an element of her. So I have to. So by default, I love
her. So I got to ask you: do you like pickles?
I do like pickles.
Did you have to eat a lot of them on this? No, your character doesn't really.
My character
eat them,
does
right?
not. He does not get high on his own supply. He does not eat a lot. He does not eat a lot of pickles. I actually did not eat one pickle throughout the filming of the entire movie, which is a.
Oh wow!
Yes, I was surrounded by the eating of a lot of pickles, but.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny. It like harkened back to the Crossing Delancey, which was like one of the other mainstream, overtly Jewish Hollywood films.
I know. There's not a lot of pickle guy. Yeah, exactly. It was a good profession. It was a good Jewish business back then, you know? And I think even today, pickles have a Jewish association with them. You go to a deli, you get some pickles.
Yeah. Do you know that pickles in Israel and pickles in America taste totally different?
I do, and I was shocked when I went to Israel and had a pickle for the first time. Yeah, they have a much more subtle, they're much more cucumbery in Israel,
yeah.
I find.
Yeah, and so Israelis, when they move to L.A., like the Zohan, they want their pickles, so they go to the Israeli stores and they buy Israeli pickles, and people like me, Americans who live in Israel, have to go to a special store to buy their American pickles.
Yeah, I lived in the Fairfax district before it turned into a streetwear and skateboarding haven. When I lived there in 2001, it was 100% Judaica stores and Jewish delis, and I would shop there, and I remember, and they would sell Israeli food, Israeli pickles, and I could get Israeli pickles from there. and then this store called Supreme opened, and it transformed the entire neighborhood from being a Jewish street into a skateboarder street.
Yeah. When I was writing about the Black Lives Matter thing, that whole neighborhood got hard hit and everything.
Well, I still live in that. I live blocks away from Fairfax.
Oh yeah. Did you experience the riot stuff, or were you out not in the neighborhood when that all stuff that happened?
No, there was rioting and looting literally, I'd say, 200 feet from my house, maybe a little tiny.
Wow. Never a dull moment, huh?
Never a dull moment, but I understand things in America are not great, and no part of me was questioning why people were as angry as they were, I could say.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We used to sit here in Israel, you know, run to the bomb shelter and say, you guys have that easy, soft life in America. And it's not really like that anymore. We're all kind of in the same boat.
The president is a white supremacist. So things are not great here.
Yeah.
and Republican politicians literally tweet blatantly anti-Semitic propaganda pretty regularly.
Yeah.
It's a weird time in America. So... Yeah. I feel that.
So, well, maybe you won't have to say that in a few months, huh?
Yeah, maybe. Oof. Dear God, that would be lovely, wouldn't it?
Okay. Well, this was really cool. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I hope.
And what can I say? Come to Israel. You've got a lot of fans here.
Hope so.
And everybody looks like you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I really, really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for speaking with me. And, all right. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.